How many times have our patients returned to our office and are just stuck in the cycle of chronic inflammation? We throw everything we have at them, nothing changes, and even our dentists are frustrated. Rather than throwing our hands up and shrugging, we need to be turning to PerioTrace by PerioProtect. I have seen the evidence firsthand and have helped so many hygienists find this resource because it really works, which is why there are so many products on the market now trying to imitate them. The results are speaking for themselves, but rather than going with an unproven product, stick with the only periodontal medicine delivery system cleared by the FDA. And not only that, but their support team is seriously among the best I've ever encountered, from the education to implementation to support when there's the inevitable bumps on the road. They are there for you. If you want to get in contact with them to learn more about how you can treat your patients better, head over to perioprotect.com/RDH. And on that site, at the bottom is a contact form that you can fill out or simply email them directly to ask for help. This is one thing I truly believe should be in every dental practice. perioprotect.com/RDH to stop the cycle of chronic inflammation. Listeners, welcome back to another episode of A Tale of Two Hygienists. This is Andrew. I'm here with a very special guest today, my brother Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Andrew.
Sounds so funny when you say that. This episode is brought to you in part by Smiles at Sea. For those of you that haven't heard the other episodes, Smiles at Sea is a dental conference on a cruise ship. The event is all about dental teams getting together to have a great time by taking their lab coat off and having the time of your life. Smiles at Sea offers up to 19 hours of continuing education during a four-night weekend cruise. It sails September 22nd to the 26th from New Orleans to Cozumel. For more information, visit the website at www.smilesatsea.com or call Dental J, the cruise planner, at 954-420-9133. And one of the reasons why I have Mike on as a guest today is because we will be going to Smiles at Sea. This will be the first time that he has been out of the country. So I'm very excited for him to do that. So, Mike, what do you think about that? What do you think about this cruise?
I am very excited to go on this cruise. I just got my passport about 2 weeks ago. So it's been a whole lot of fun.
Love it. I love it a lot. You know what else our listeners don't? I mean, they know because I talk about you sometimes. Do you listen to the podcast?
I do listen to the podcast.
Do you really?
A couple of them.
How many episodes have you gone into?
I think it's like 9.
So you haven't heard me talk smack about you yet?
Nope.
Okay, it's coming up. I think it's like episode 16 or something. But this is episode 26, so I'm pretty impressed so far that we've been able to keep it going for this long.
It's pretty awesome.
So you were able to come down and work in our office for this last week. What'd you think?
That is correct. Had a really fun time working in your office.
I feel like I'm not getting anything from you. Are you nervous about this?
What do you want me to say?
I don't know. Tell the listeners how awesome my office is, first of all.
Well, it's pretty darn awesome. First of all, we have two great doctors that make the job a lot of fun.
Let's just give them a shout out real quick. Dr. Nod and Dr. Grant.
Dr. Nod and Dr. Grant.
You guys are awesome.
They each have their own unique personalities, which make it a whole lot of fun. Mm-hmm. They're both very energetic. They like to get a lot of work done, which mm-hmm. is right up my alley. Mm-hmm. Just makes the time go by a whole lot faster. And I don't know, they got neat personalities. We got a lot of stuff in common, so that makes it always fun too.
So tell me more about like your background. I mean, I know all about it, but tell the listeners. Because for you, when it comes to working hard and getting a lot of work done, that's not necessarily maybe every hygienist's dream job. They, you know, a lot of us want to come in, we see one patient every hour and get through the day and we're good to go. What are your thoughts and what's your background of why you like to be like high production, go, go, go?
Well, a lot of the background came from when I worked in pediatrics. A lot of the how your performance was based was how much that you could get done. And it was always mm-hmm. just a nice to be able to do so much in such a short amount of time. think it's very beneficial to the patients for that as well. And even though where I work now is not necessarily production-based, I still think it's really important for patient experience and helping them accomplish more at their dental appointment.
Because who wants to come back again to get treatment done? I mean, especially if it's like a little buckle or an occlusal or something like that.
Right.
Which is different too for us, being in the state that we're able to just go ahead and get the patient numb for the doctor. The doctor comes in and preps real quick, and then we just put the filling in, and you know, we're still usually within our 50-minute appointment or whatever.
Well, it also helps too, like, you know, working with the assistants in your office too. They have the same mental frame, mm-hmm. and so they're always, I mean, they're just right on it when doctor says to do it. You know, it's not even a thought. We just go right through it, and everybody works together as a team, and it makes it so easy.
Who's your favorite assistant?
Caitlin and Chelsea.
Wait, is that in your office?
Yeah, that's in my office.
I was like, we don't have a Caitlin, and Chelsea's a hygienist in my office. Well, there you have it. Good job, Caitlin and Chelsea, for making the podcast. Shout out to you guys in the Olympia office for being awesome.
That's right.
I mean, I want to have you on your own episode sometimes. I mean, this is like a little intro for a different episode. Sorry, you know, get your own. I know you really don't want to do this. It's fine. You're doing good so far.
Thanks.
I did want to ask you a question though about the production part of things, because there's in the circle. Are you rolling your eyes at me? Okay. In the circles of dental hygiene, we have people that are hourly based, right? And then production based. So in your experience with the pediatrics, the doctors were production based, and we both worked at the same place, and I feel that the doctors were very ethical at that place. I really liked what they did, actually. I don't think that they did anything outside of the bounds of what their practice was, but it does open up the doors for maybe people to do a little unethical treatment. And then jumping into the hygiene side of it, they have hygienists that are compensated also on production. So what are your thoughts on that? Would you rather be a production-based hygienist, knowing that you work hard and you can get paid a lot more? Or do you kind of like where you're at with your hourly pay?
I do like where I'm at with my hourly pay. I think it's very nice. I don't think I've ever worked for somebody where it was extremely production-based on the hygiene side. Well, we worked for the doctors that were production-based. And so I don't know how I would feel about it.
Because, like, if you treatment planned more SRPs and got that done, you know, fluoride varnish, I feel like right now the way our practices are set up with our company, varnish is included in, you know, their payments that they already make. So there's not an extra fee for them usually. And so it's pretty easy to talk them into doing varnish. But there are upsells in private practice, right, where it would be $42 or something like that. And if you were able to, I mean, you have a sales background too, before you even went into dentistry and you were sales based, I feel like you'd be with your work ethic and with your sales background, you'd be a pretty good candidate to make a ton of money by, I don't want to say overdiagnosing, because I don't want to lead you into it, but like there's the potential for overdiagnosing and you could make a lot more money. Isn't that appealing at all to you?
Not really. I mean, I guess I could see the point of if it really made that much more money, how people would want to be that way. But I also, even when it was like sales background, you know, I really tried to be an honest salesman. I know that's not really a thing.
Kind of like an oxymoron.
Yeah, totally. But, you know, I really only wanted to sell them what they needed.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel the same way with my patients. You know, if you took a 4-millimeter pocket and pushed it down to a 5, you know, maybe they need SRPs all of a sudden.
Right.
You know, but that's not truly in my mind what they would need. And so I don't know if I would do well in one of those performance-based, not necessarily performance-based, but like production-based offices, because I just don't know if I could sell them stuff they didn't need.
So this is going to come off as like a sales pitch for Willamette Dental, because everyone should come work for us. But along those lines, it's kind of nice that a lot of the products that we sell in our office are not necessarily at cost. We make a little bit of money on them, but I mean, they're pretty inexpensive for the most part. So for like chlorhexidine, I don't know of another office. I mean, because there's a lot of offices that do set that have that product in their office, but I don't know another one that sells it under $10 like we do. I don't know of another office that'll sell your Prevnar 5000 or Clinpro 5000 for less than $15. And then your Sonicares. I mean, all of those ones are, I mean, we're not making a ton of money on those products. It's just, it is nice not having to worry about upselling people all the time.
I agree. And one of the things that I think is the difference for me, one of the words that you used was products. And I'm a big person like against saying that they're products, because really they're prescriptions. Mm-hmm. And really they're needed for the patient, or the doctor wouldn't be prescribing them. Now, you can start getting into products as like the Sonicares and the toothbrush heads and stuff like that, which, again, you said we don't make a lot of money on. But when it comes to upselling them to a prescription, to me, it's not really an upsell. It is just what they need.
It's almost like what Michelle and I have been talking about, like the last three episodes that you haven't listened to yet, or like the last eight episodes, maybe. I don't know. We talk about that a lot on this
okay.
show a lot. But I'm glad you're on the same mindset. So, what gets you the most excited about this Smiles at Sea thing, other than being able to put a little stamp in your passport?
I'm really looking forward to trying a whole lot of food.
Yeah. The cruise is going to be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Where do you normally get your CE from? Because you and I have two different, way different paths in hygiene, it feels like.
Yeah, I think mostly I just tend to do like local stuff. I really rely on a lot of in-house training that we do. Mm-hmm. When I worked in prosthodontics, he had a lot of conferences that he scheduled and that we just went with him, which we were paid for. So that was a motivator for
me. Awesome. Super nice.
My best friend's dad is a periodontist, and he annually puts on a symposium for dental hygienists, and it's 8 hours. Mm-hmm. So between that and then, you know, maybe an online course here, online course there, and my CPR, you know, I pretty much met my 15 hours regularly.
Yeah, yeah. So you've never really been to, like, the regional conferences, Pacific Northwest Dental Conference?
Never been to the regional conferences, never did, you know, the Northwest Dental or the Oregon Dental, not really ever been to anything big like that.
Interesting. Oh, that's my phone. Sorry about that. Should have turned that right off earlier, but I didn't. It is the Hilton Honors people getting back to me finally, because I don't know my little Hilton Honors code is. Anyways.
Is that the hotel that we're staying at before we go?
I think that might, may or may not be. I can't remember. But I was looking for it for all my travel stuff. And I think that we stayed in one in St. Louis or something one time, and I never got credit for it. So I want to try and get credit for it. So the prospect of getting, as Elijah says, who does the Smiles at Sea, up to 19 hours of CE in a 4-night weekend cruise. How appealing is that to you from the educational standpoint, not just from the fact that you get to have fun in Cozumel and eat all this food? You knock it all out in one shebang.
Oh, absolutely. Because a lot of times it's over the course of the whole year that I have to find these classes. Yeah. And to be able to take just those 4 days and just get it out in one time is awesome. The other thing that's nice too is really the affordability wise, the amount that I'm paying to go on the cruise is very similar to what I'd be paying to do the stuff locally. So cost wise, it's pretty much the same. Just maybe a little bit more in the travel portion. Yeah.
So, okay. So I'm on this podcast, I'm pretty wide open about everything. So let's talk money for just a second, because I can't remember all the little details and I might be a little bit off on this. So the flight from Seattle is probably right around 320, I think is what we looked at. I know we booked this a long time ago, but it was like 320. Yeah,
I think I found one for like 305 the other day.
But something like that, yeah. So, and that's to New Orleans from Seattle, so it's not too bad. And then you have the price of the cabin itself, and then the price of the course itself also.
Correct.
So all included, it's going to be less than $1,000 for this whole entire thing.
Right.
I just, I don't know. I can't get him up. And then the cool thing too is you don't know a lot of the friends that I know that I met at like conferences that I'm really excited for you to, you know, kind of finally meet. I was just messaging, her name's Sarah Thiel. Do you listen to the CE Zoom one yet?
Nope.
Okay, so that's one that's a really, really good one. It's one of my favorite ones. But Sarah's husband's going to go on the cruise. And so I think his name's Phil. And so we're going to hang out with him a little bit in the EA Sports lounge bar thing. And then, of course, Michelle will be there. So there's a lot of our other kind of acquaintance friends that'll be there. So it'll be fun to meet them. You're a little bit more outgoing than I am when it comes to meeting people. So I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, we'll see.
Well, it's just that I feel like because I don't like cold contacting people, that I'll be like, hey, so-and-so that I met one time, this is my brother Mike. And then like you'll be like the icebreaker. So like I won't be so like awkward about it. And they'll be like, oh, that's cool. You guys are brothers, blah, blah, blah. Okay, one last question. And then
all right,
it's 11:11 at night. I know that you're really tired and you did not want to do this podcast.
Way past my bedtime.
Yes. Do you think from the very, very get-go, has it been beneficial to have a brother in dental hygiene? Or at least doing the same path from the very before school started, through school, through your career? Has it been beneficial or not necessarily?
I think that it has been beneficial.
/ also being a guy. Do you feel like that has been beneficial or not necessarily?
I would say I've had 3 jobs in my career so far, and 2 out of the 3, I would say it has been a more than beneficial.
To be a guy.
To be a guy.
Do you care to expound a little bit upon it? You don't have to go into specifics, but like what generally, why do you think that has helped you?
Well, in my first job, like my second day or third day into it, the doctor who was a guy as well, he was actually the owner of the partner owner of the company, took me out and we were sitting down and, you know, he just said, man, Mike, it's nice to have another guy in the office. Hmm. And I started to probe questions at him like this. Why do you think that is? He's like, it just kind of mellows everybody out. Mm-hmm. Just having another personality in here. And ever since then, I've looked into, okay, is that really true, or is he just saying that because it's my second day and he wants sure. to, you know, wants to keep me here a little while longer. But it really has been, you know, that way. I just think it just kind of having another nice, easygoing, energetic, wanting to get stuff done. You know, somebody that they know, that the doctors know will support them in decisions that they make, and you know, sometimes bridge that gap to the assistance of, okay, let's just get this done. This will be exciting. I think that really helps.
And I think that you and I have talked about this a little bit before, but I mean, because there are women that can have that same mindset and have that same ability, definitely for sure, right? But I feel like a lot of times in these family settings where, you know, you and I are the breadwinners for our families, and it is very, very much a serious career for us, as opposed to the person that works 2 days a week who doesn't, in the doctor's eyes, isn't as invested in the outcomes of the patient's health or getting the work done or whatever. It's one of those things, like, I know I'm going to offend a lot of female listeners, but I'm like, yeah, this is why we're so much better than you. But it's not that we're better. I think it's just like, it's a perception thing. I don't know that the actual work that we do is better.
Oh yeah, I would absolutely agree. I think there's a lot of people out there that do very good work.
Right, right. And I mean, I don't think it has anything to do with, you know, male, female, whatever. It's just, I mean, I know that there are, yeah, at that first job that you had, I mean, there are still people there that put in better fillings than I will ever do. I mean, they're just very artistic. They get it, you know.
I think, too, just having a presence, you know, of another guy there is just, you know, sometimes that just comes across as an authoritative figure. And not that we walk around thinking that we're, you know, the awesomest thing in the whole entire world, but it's just really easy.
Speak for yourself.
Well, that's probably true. But, you know, it's sometimes a lot easier sometimes when I just say, hey, you know, do you mind taking this prophy versus another assistant coming over and saying, oh, you know, who they might be battling for something for, and now it's, oh, who, it's versus you versus me versus somebody just making a decision and doing it. Sometimes it's just easier when somebody says, let's do it this way.
Right. Now, have you also kind of felt that maybe sometimes being a guy has hindered or excluded you from certain?
Oh, I was told. When I worked in prosthodontics, when I went through the interview process, it was the doctor and the office manager disagreed on my employment. Mm-hmm. It was just interesting because this came out months after I had gotten hired there. The doctor ended up liking me quite a bit. And actually, he even said when I left was, hey, you really opened up my eyes to having guy hygienists. And I thought that was a pretty cool statement. But anyways, yeah, the office manager even told me, it took us so long to get back to you. We wanted to keep trying because we thought you were the best candidate out there, but the doctor would just question so many things about even, you know, what are you going to wear? Mm-hmm. It's got to be different than what the doctor wears.
Yeah.
You know, it was, you know, how's he going to respond to me asking him to do something? There was just a lot of questions in the doctor's mind of how I was going to be. And then when I went in, it was, you know, no big deal. I just went in, tried to do all the extra work that we could, you know, followed the plan that he had laid out, like, you know, the hygienist should. Mm-hmm. And it worked out really nicely. But yeah, it was pretty funny because she told me, she's like, I knew I wanted to hire you right away, but the doctor just kept beating around the bush. And finally, 2 months later, we called you.
Yeah. Did I tell you that's what happened with me in Yakima?
No.
Oh, Dr. Pham, he wasn't sure at first. Supposedly, this, you know, you always hear it second, third hand, but
yeah.
Do you think that helped us get in school? You had good grades.
Yeah, I mean, that's debatable because, you know, there were things, you know, I only speak English, you speak multiple languages, and knowing a lot of the things that go into that,
I think that
we were well qualified in addition to being guys.
So many applicants, though. And you've got to think that there's going to be people that have at least a 4.0. We didn't have perfect 4.0. You had a 3.9, whatever. I was like 3.9 or pretty close to a 3.9, a 3.89. I don't know. I was pretty close. But yeah, I think that there's only three of us in the class, I believe, that actually got in first time. Everyone else is waitlisted.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think there's got to be at least, you know, a dozen or more 4.0 students that should have been ahead of us technically. No?
Yeah. No. And I mean, maybe, but I've talked to, you know, a handful of 7 or 8, you know, girls assistants that have gotten into hygiene school that I've worked with, and their grades were less than ours, like 3.6, 3.7. So I definitely think it helped with maybe, you know, guys are more of a minority when it comes to dental hygiene. So I think being a guy, you know, they're going to look at you maybe a little bit longer, but definitely, I mean, you have to have the qualifications.
Yeah, I agree. I think that we were qualified. I think that you did a lot better that first year than I did, though, for sure, in class and stuff.
The first day?
First year.
Oh, first year?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think you did a lot better than I did. Do you remember that time that I didn't study for the test and got like a 6 out of 24 on my restorative test?
I do remember that.
Do you remember that time that I fell asleep during class?
I think we both did that.
That singular time, I didn't do it more than once. No, just kidding, I did.
Yeah, I think what I remember the most was the study sessions and you keeping me awake, though. So,
gosh, that was nice. Like, I know you're like way past your bedtime now, but this was like the norm before. Like, we'd just stay up and cram. Like, we always had a test the next day. What's up with that?
I think that's just hygiene school.
Yeah. Well, all right, Mike, I'll let you go to bed now, but appreciate you kind of hanging out with me. And we're going to have you on an episode sometime. I'm going to really ask you some hard-hitting journalistic-type questions. I might even have them prepared ahead of time, unlike today's impromptu. Although I did bring 2 microphones, so I was kind of prepared.
I still think this was premeditated.
This whole thing?
The whole thing.
Dude, no. Not one little bit of it was... I mean, yeah, I wanted to interview you, but like, I didn't have any questions prepared, obviously. But no, it's Smiles at Sea. That's like our like co-sponsor of the show. So then you and I are going to go to it. And so questions developed from there.
All right.
All right, listeners, we really hope you enjoy this episode number 26. Have a great week.
So welcome to another episode of A Tale of Two Hygienists. This is Michelle, and Andrew is lurking in the background. He's called in, and so he will be unmuting himself and probably chiming in sometime throughout the podcast. But today we are with Andre Sheridan. Did I say your name correctly?
That's good enough. It's Sheridan, but that's Sheridan. Good. Sheridan. If it's on a check, I'll cash it.
That's excellent. Yeah. So kind of start and tell us about yourself and who you are and why you are in dentistry, because you are not a hygienist and you are not a dentist. You have really no education, like 4-year degree, 2-year degree, like we all would, but you've kind of snuck in there and fell in love with it like we all have, correct?
True. True. And it's kind of like I studied under two mentors. First was my dad, who was an entrepreneur. He owned a savings and loans for most of his life. And I kind of worked with him when I was a kid and learned how to be an entrepreneur, and then went into retail. I went into really high-end retail. I sold Yves Saint Laurent and Louis Vuitton and, you know, Versace, Armani. And then at one point, my sister married our family dentist, and when I started, when he was my brother-in-law, he asked me if I could help him with his business, and little did I know that he wanted me to ride in the car with him to a perio surgery course and learn the business of dentistry, and here I am standing over a cadaver in a, you know, a Versace suit, placing Gore-Tex, placing demineralized bone, and learning periosurgery. And I never went back to retail. I just picked up every book I could find on perio. I picked up the ADA CDT code book, and I just fell in love with the world of dentistry, and it's now 27 years later.
Nice. And
never looked back.
Yeah.
So is the story that you're telling that anyone in retail just needs to see a cadaver and then they'll want to immediately do dentistry?
Or they'll stay in retail, one or the other.
They'll either solidify their decision to be in retail or they'll move on.
Yeah. And the crazy thing is my brother-in-law was the kind of guy that, you know, when I sat at the desk, and I'm a FDP, a front desk person. When I sat at the front desk and I would say to him, hey, why does it take you an hour and a half to do a root canal? He would take an extracted tooth, put it in plaster, and have me sit down and do a root canal and say, you're going to learn this so you know why it takes me this long to do. And I learned everything. He was one of the best teachers I've ever, ever had in my life. And, you know, I was telling Michelle, my mom's was my college professor, so that's a stretch to say that my brother-in-law, the dentist, was a better teacher.
Well, I think you gave me an idea. Andrew, do you think the next time that we hear people say, does it really take that long to clean this patient, we just like give them the mouth mirror and scalers and say, you do it faster. See how that goes. I don't think it will be received well.
Okay. I still can't get the mirror thing together. That's something I guess you guys have got on me. That mirror thing just does not work for my hands, you know.
Yeah. So. Well, practice definitely makes perfect, but that was probably my hardest thing to get the hang of, like looking in the mirror and scaling. But yeah. So you said 20-something years later.
And yeah, so, you know, yeah, a couple years ago, you know, this was in 2001. I had referred someone to a periodontist that I knew for an implant, and this was, you know, we're talking 16 years ago, an implant. I referred somebody for an implant, and that periodontist was somebody who had heard my name in the business and was interested in talking to me about perio, and, you know, I was thrilled. And he was doing a clinical study called the Periodontal Quality Index, which was about a 35-page clinical study that patients had to fill out. They had to agree to the treatment, and then they went through periodontal treatment using three different modalities, which was just, you know, your standard scaling root planning, scaling root planning with a sharpened instrument. So that sounds weird, but yeah, that was different. And then scaling with site-specific anti-infectives. You know, I won't use brand names, but site-specific anti-infectives. And then the combination of site-specifics plus host modulation, so Peristat.
Okay.
I mean, that's the only one that was out at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So we took they were able to take a lot of patients through care, find out which of those modalities worked better. And once we got some really hard data, the next step was, and what he brought me in for, was to help them take that clinical study into a patient-focused protocol. And that's where we came up with the StatCheck program. So we kind of co-designed what was Dr. Neil Goddard and a group of really, really interesting people, a clinical psychologist, some business leaders, somebody who had been one of the heads of a really big dental company. We all sort of got together and brainstormed these ideas, and what we came up with was this protocol that allowed us to have a better communication with patients so that they would accept care, not just understand perio, but to accept care. And that's what StatCheck is.
It also looks to me like it's a little bit of calibration within the clinicians.
Agreed. One of the biggest things, and one of the things that I've been doing for the last, you know, I don't know, 20 years, is working with offices, and I have a weird way of looking at life. I see everything now as quads and as parts of four. So, I actually created a program called the CREW process, which, you know, people are always throwing around the word team. You know, I think the word team is ridiculous. I mean, even if you're in sports, you may be a team when you're on the field, but you're not a team when you're not on the field. My oldest son, we were watching the basketball playoffs. I'm not a sports guy, but my son was watching and he was saying, you know, I saw an interview with Dennis Rodman, and Dennis Rodman, Scottie Pippen, and Michael Jordan were on what we consider one of the best teams ever. They won three championships, Chicago Bulls. But both Scottie Pippen and Dennis Rodman said that they never had a conversation ever other than the ones they had on the basketball court. And that's exactly what I see in dentistry. We don't need to be friends. We don't need to be chummy in the evenings. We'd have a mission, and that mission is to become a crew, which in my world means we all row at the same pace, we all carry our weight at the same time, we all have a singular focus to get to the end of the line. But if somebody's not rowing their oar at the right pace, they need to be successful someplace else. They need to be off of the boat. And a lot of times I go in offices and, you know, there's, you know, I'll be training a staff and all of a sudden somebody will say, well, you know, Marge isn't going to do it that way, or we knew Sally wasn't going to come today because she's not really into perio. And what I find is that person needs to row somebody else's boat. There needs to be that that synergy, you know, and StatCheck does that.
I think that is quite the interesting analogy, because so often you do hear we're a team, but I think too sometimes that the team word is thrown around because staff has become such kind of a no word. Like, we're not just employees, but we're all working together for patient care, and that's where the team has come from. But I do like the idea of it being a crew and that we are kind of all working together. Because if somebody doesn't row, then you might just be going in circles in some cases. So I like that. Makes a lot of sense. So let's talk about StatCheck and what it actually is and why it does what it does for patients and for calibration within the office.
All right. Well, so let's go back a little bit in history. So we go back to like 1977. And the World Health Organization came up with the Community Periodontal Index for treatment needs. It was the CPITN, believe it or not. That started a protocol of normalizing diagnostics. It was a great idea, but it was created for the World Health Organization. In 1992, the ADA and the AAP introduced the periodontal screening and recording, the PSR. Everybody knows the PSR. And that did a better job of sort of normalizing periodontal conditions. The issue was patients didn't get it, you know, and it didn't become the standard of care in a lot of offices because a lot of offices used it as a sort of a way to quickly get a diagnosis without doing a full perio charting, which I don't know how you, those two things just seem completely opposite to me. So in all this time, what happened is, you know, everybody looked for sort of shortcuts, and to use what you just said before, you know, when you take a shortcut, you tend to go around in circles. What Dr. Goddard did with introducing the PQI was say, hey, look, as a periodontist, I think it's really, really important that I do a full comprehensive exam. You know, six-point probing, we want to measure recession, we want to measure furcation, we want to measure the entire thing. But at the same time, let's quantify that, and let's quantify it not as sextants, which PSR did, but in quadrants, the way that most offices are going to treat the disease. So if we divide the mouth into quads, and then we look at that quad by bleeding on probing, subgingival calculus, and formalar pockets are greater, and we also consider clinical attachment loss, then we can quantify just that quad. And the example I always give is, imagine a patient walks into an office and they only have, let's just call it, they only have two through eight.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
If they only have two through eight and they have X number of bleedings on probing, subgingival calculus, and formalar pockets are greater, if they just have that, could we get a group, you know, that 1 in 10 dentists, you know, that the normal dentine commercial joke, can we get 1 in 10 dentists to agree, or at least 9 out of the 10, to agree on a perio diagnosis for that quad? And what I found is that everybody goes, well, yeah, but, yeah, well, sort of, yes, maybe, yes. But there is, through the AAP, a very clear definition of how many X's gives us Y. So why can't we make that a really clear protocol? And I'll give you what StatCheck is. So if in that quad, there's no pockets, there's no bleeding, no subgingival calculus, all right, it's asymptomatic, and that's an A. Mm-hmm. If there's bleeding, but everything else is fine, that's a B. And typically, we'll see more than just that, but let's just, for simplistic sake, say that. If there's sub-G calculus in that quad, then we're talking about a C. If there's depth or a disease, you know, and we're talking some fives, then we have a D. And if that quad has greater than sixes, bleeding, sub-G, then we got an F, and we're talking about a failing grade for that quad.
Okay.
And based on those things, we know what the treatment plan is going to be. So if it's A, it's a prophy patient. All right? If it's a B, it's a prophy patient we might need to do some fine scaling on. If it's C, we're going to be doing SRP. If it's D, we're going to do SRP with maybe site-specific ineffectives, et cetera, et cetera. And if it's F, we need to refer that patient out.
I like it.
And now let's just take that exact same protocol and then apply it to all four quads the same way we would when we're building another treatment plan. So if you look at it that way, it makes everybody on the same page. And, you know, I've worked with offices where, you know, there's a sort of battle between, okay, where does that shelf go from B's to C's? Where from just bleeding points are we going to start scaling this patient? That's okay. I don't mind if there's a plus or minus one or two sites. That's fine. But at least that normalizes things. At least it allows us to move forward with treatment, but we don't have a doctor walking into an operatory saying, well, we'll just wait.
Oh, the detriment of our profession. I think that's probably, for me as a hygienist, the most frustrating thing that can happen after I've spent X amount of time educating, and the patient is like, okay, yeah, I think I need this. I understand what you're talking about. And then the doctor comes in, sits down for exam. We have that conversation. He's like, well, I'll see you in 6 months. I'm like, you and me in the parking lot after work, we're going to fight. Because do you know what I just did? And one, it's not good for the patient. Two, you kind of made me look like an idiot. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. And three, I mean, I just wasted my breath and my time and your time, honestly, and you and production. I mean, that's numbers coming in, and some people like Andrew are very focused on the numbers. And so all of those things, you just wiped clean with that one statement. You just really killed that. So that's, I think this again, like I feel like it's a great way for calibration, because then hygiene, if you have, and in some offices, there is the case where they have 4 or 5 hygienists. There's not, this person has had 6 millimeter pockets for years and now they're on my schedule. Like, what has that hygienist been doing? It is what it is. Like, they're A, B, C, D, and F. Like, here it is. And here's your standards to follow.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of what I do, because I'm not a clinician, you know, I guess it gives me clarity. I can step back from it and look at just the numbers. You know, a lot of what I do is, you know, there's in most businesses, everybody looks at the three major components of a business, which are people, process, and profit, or product, either way. People call it either way. I see it differently. I think, again, go back to force. I think there's a fourth component of every business that most people miss. That fourth component is the fourth P that I live in, which is philosophy. And I think that philosophy sets up everything else. It sets up who we hire, the people. It sets up our processes. You know, when do we decide if we're scaling or not? It decides what our profit is. And, you know, it tells us how much we give to charity, you know, what we do with our profit. So that philosophy starts everything. And the way that when I work with an office, if an office has this philosophy issue when it comes to perio, this stops that process. And it says, hey, look, we're going to slow down. It's just like, you know, if you shake a compass, you'll never know which way you're going. But if you stop for a moment, that compass points you in north, direct, you know, it points you towards the north. It gives you clarity of direction. This stat check process does the same thing. When you stop and you set your compass, you are really clear which way you're going to go. So if I have a temp hygienist coming to work for me, I could say, hey, look, here's our stat check protocol. This is what we think, this is where we draw the line in the sand that says this is when we scale and this is when we do a fine scale, prophy, whatever. But it's real clear. And it doesn't, you know, you could see the knots in their shoulders go away, because now they know where you stand.
No, I think that is very true, because as someone that's been temping the last year, which is a very different scene from the last decade of my career, I go into these offices and I am blown away by just the bloody prophies that happen and the undiagnosed perio. And I even just recently was in a perio office where I was just highly disappointed in the level of care and active disease that was just perpetuated by lack of calibration and lack of, this is our protocol. You know, there was mm-hmm. just no protocol. And so that, I think that this is a really great way. And so when you have this is like something that they're going to do every single time, or is this like a new patient and yearly exam, or how is this looking? Is this like every time you sit down and see the patient, they get their quads get graded?
In my world, it's something that happens every time, because in my world, you know, I live in Andre world, which is, you know, kind of like Disney. In Andre world, you know, yes, it happens every time, because every time we're going to be doing spot probing, or, you know, an initial exam, we're going to do a comp exam, comprehensive
right.
probing.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know, I'm killing myself. I'm biting my inside of the corner of my tongue by even saying probing. I never use the word probing in my office. I think only aliens probe. I think, you know, in my world, hygienists measure pockets, and they do it with a periodontal ruler.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
it's a different language for me, and just like at Disney, we don't have, you know, you don't have employees, you have a, you know, a cast. I think we have to, again, calibrate our words, too. I call it SELL, which is seeking, equal, listening, and learning. If we have an equal language that we use in our office, it makes it easier for the patient. I mean, when I started in dentistry, patients would say to me, oh, I think I need a cap, and, you know, I'm not going to try to correct them. I'm going to give them a cap, you know, what the heck. So a lot of this is just finding a norm, finding a way to explain to patients. And a lot of times, you know, it's not about selling. You know, we're not doing this because we're selling perio, and I'm doing air quotes, you can't see it. But, you know, it's not about selling. I have a lot of offices I've gone in, and they have perio programs, and it's all about selling. It's all about, you know, selling brushes or whatever. This is about patient care, and it's about what's right, and it's about, you know, getting out of that prophy cycle. And it's that bloody prophy thing is just scary.
It is. It really is. But it is the reality, and I would even venture to say 75 to 80% of our profession, honestly. I feel like it's happening more often than not. And I like this touch on the idea of, you know, and I'm going to use air quotes too, selling, because with me working with Tepe, we do not offer, or the products are not in the stores. And so the offices always have the option of providing the product to the patient and selling and putting it on to their bill. And people were like, we don't sell products. We don't want anything to do with that. I was like, well, it's not selling. Like, you're not making such a profit on this that you're making payments on things every month. Like, you're actually just giving them a service of convenience, honestly. Like, you're just providing some convenience, because now they don't have to go find it. They don't have to worry about it at their recall appointments. They just grab what they need and they go. Like, it's not a selling point. And I think, and we actually spoke with Christine Hodgson, who is does RDH. Well, now actually she's not RDH editor anymore, but she was talking about like how we put the stigma, like we can't afford it. We can't, like just, we put the stigma and we project on our patients, and we probably do the same thing with the selling side of it. Like they're going to think that they don't need it. We're just selling it. They're not going to believe us. And I think it's all about how we approach the situation. And I think your words and not calling it a probe is really smart, because it does sound scary. I mean, it sounds like something going in for a probe, like that sounds awful. But this periodontal measurement, where you're measuring the depths of the pocket to look for bone loss and other issues, like I think that's a great way of putting it. And it's all about our perspective and how we deliver it to our patients.
Yeah. It, you know, it's funny because, you know, my background is in sales. I mean, I sold $10,000 ball gowns to people, you know, who would buy one once a month. That was my life, and I can sell. You know, that's not an issue. My world in dentistry is about, you know, what's right for the patient, what is right for the practice or the business of dentistry, and, you know, how do you make those two things work together? Now, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen my photo, but, you know, I've got gray hair, and I take great pride in getting my hair dyed gray so I look like the rest of my family. But, you know, if I were going to a hairdresser, they would say to me, you know, you need to have this product in order to maintain this beautiful color of gray that you have in your hair. And I would never think twice about saying anything other than, that sounds like the right product to keep my hair the way it should be. But in dentistry, we have separated what's the right product from what is selling. And again, there's nothing wrong with a patient and a practice seeking an equal listening and language. There's nothing wrong with that. The problem is selling somebody something that you don't have confidence in. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have confidence in it, you shouldn't be doing it. It's the same as if you're doing an implant and you're not comfortable with your skills, maybe you shouldn't do it yet. maybe you should get the confidence in the procedure to be able to do it. So, you know, it does change the sell when you understand the product. You know, there is a lot of selling going on and not a lot of, like you said, synergy that happens.
Yeah, the synergy. And, you know, and I think that says a lot, because when you do see certain services and certain procedures and certain products work for patients, you become loyal and you become an advocate for that. And so then you don't feel like you're selling. And that has been told to me more times than one day I'm going to actually believe it in my heart. But I always say, I'm not a salesperson. I couldn't do sales. I love working with Tebe because they asked me to be an educator and go around and teach. And that's where I feel that my heart is in teaching and educating. And anybody I say that to that is in more of a sales position as far as a quota every month will say, but an educator, you're not, if you're teaching them something, you're not selling. And you be by teaching them the way of what you're doing and why it's important and whatever it is, you're selling them something without selling them.
Yep.
And so
that's why, you know, a lot of what I've done with StatCheck is this. You know, I leave the clinical decisions to the clinicians. I think there are phenomenal protocols out there. You know, it was actually a couple weeks ago I did a Google search for just perio protocols. I just typed in those words into Google. I got back 509,000 results because there's a million clinical protocols. So now that I'm scaling, this is what, you know, this is when I bring the patient back and this is when I do a recall visit and that kind of stuff. There's thousands of those. I mean, I talked to Caroline Biami, who's an RDH in Florida, who used to be a dentist in Brazil. She's got a phenomenal periodontal protocol that treats the patient. And there's thousands of those out there.
Right.
But the issue is the patient going to say yes to care? Mm-hmm. Is the patient, we've all had patients who we've done, you know, the right side of quad, right side quad scaling, who don't want to get the left side done, you know, because they don't value it. They don't understand it. Those people who, you know, who fail in treatment, you know, when I say fail, I mean they don't maintain it because they don't understand. They don't know why they ever needed to be probed and scaled, you know. So that's the big difference between coming up with this language so that I can say, you know, hey, Michelle, the last time you were in, we were really concerned because on the lower right side, you were kind of, you know, we measured it and it was a C, and we wanted to get you better. Let's take a look today and see how well you've done. Well, you've done better. It's a B. You're doing really well.
I think two people respond to that grade. Like, I'm not an A? What do you mean I'm not an A? I'm an F down here? Well, how do I fix that? How do I get to an A? I think people respond to that kind of. I mean, it takes you back to school almost.
Yeah. And it's so funny because, you know, if you think about the Olympics or you even think about Dancing with the Stars, a 10 is a good thing. Not a 10-millimeter pocket, but a 10 is a good thing. Right. And to say to somebody, hey, you've got 7 millimeters, you've got bleeding on probing, and there's subgingival calculus and suppuration, they're looking at you like you're a complete moron. Like, what planet are you from? I don't understand any of that stuff. But they definitely will understand a B for bleeding. They understand an A for, you know, asymptomatic. They understand the C for calculus. So when you, again, have a different language for it, you know, I'm fighting this fight, I'll never win it, to get rid of the word implant.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be a hard one. Why?
As in any medical field, oh, I know. But it's an artificial root. If you've ever talked to anybody about an implant, the first things they say are, oh, okay, I have this implant done. Now I guess I don't need to have anything else. Well, no, you're going to need to have a crown put on that. They think the implant's the entire system. We've messed up the language by using a term that's an internal term mm-hmm. to explain what we're doing. We're doing root replacement surgery, which we'll then do a crown on.
Yeah, because the parts and pieces the patient never really understands.
Nah.
You have to really break it down and explain to them, you know, there's components that are going to be screwing in and out of this root replacement.
Yep.
And that's never coming out, hopefully, that implant.
Yeah. Well, there was a quote in an old textbook that I read that was my brother-in-law's, and it was, we need to start treating our patients as a whole, W-H-O-L-E, and not the mouth as a whole, H-O-L-E.
Oh, definitely. I joke with my patients all the time, like, did you know your mouth is connected to the rest of your body? It's going to come as a shock, but it is a part of you.
Yeah.
So, go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say, you know, a lot of this is you know, my path through dentistry has always been, as much as I know about dentistry, I try my best not to get sucked into dental world, so that I start, you know, sort of using the language of dentistry. I like to figure out a way to say it the way that I would say it as a consumer, and not as somebody in the field. You know, that's a big part of, you know, why I love how StatCheck works in most dental offices.
No, and I think that's a valuable service to offer, is outside a perspective that's different than, I mean, you could see so much when you're outside of that box.
Mm-hmm.
Really help the patients. So if someone is interested, as we probably all really should be interested in this StatCheck, because it's such a great way to simplify what we're doing and what we're trying to explain to the patient, how can they integrate this into their office?
The easiest way to get StatCheck going is to, you know, so shoot me an email. I'll give my email address, and get a copy of the protocol, you know, the actual StatCheck, the grade, and sit down as a crew, doctors, hygienist, and say, okay, where is the line in the sand between an A and a B, and between a B and a C, and a C and a D and an F? And you may even, you know, and this is like I said, from a periodontist, you may even want to sit down with your periodontist and say, hey, when we see a patient and they have X, when do you want us to refer them to you? You know, Perio is one of those businesses that's hurting for business right now. You know, and they may say, hey, look, we want to see your D's and your F's, and your D's when they become X, you know, and get them involved in it.
Okay, but that's a great
sit
idea.
Sit down as a group and say, this minus whatever, you know, I'll let everybody decide on that as clinicians. And then look at the perio protocols out there for treatment, and don't look at ones that are specifically about how insurance covers it, because that is not the answer. The answer is clinical and not insurance. And don't let your front desk, you know, I'm a front desk person, but don't let your front desk person dictate how, you know, how you treat perio. Treat it clinically using these protocols, very clear. And, you know, I'll put a plug in for, if you want to get clear on the proper coding to use, get in touch with Tom Lamoli of Lamoli and Associates, get his coding book and understand how to code the treatment properly. And if you do that, then you're golden. Once that's in place, everybody has to just be consistent with the way it's done.
So where can they get this protocol? Is it online?
It's online. You can look me up on LinkedIn. You can look me up on Facebook. Or you can just shoot me an email or a text directly, and I'll be glad to just email it to you. I don't have a website because I'm not selling anything. There's nothing to sell. This is the StatCheck program is something that I'd love to be out there. You know, like I was watching The Wizard of Oz out there. It's one of those things that, or you know, I hate to say it, but you can't even sing Happy Birthday because somebody owns it. This is a program that's out there. It was published in Dentistry Today. You can download it off the internet, or you can just get it from me. Do a Google search for StatCheck, you'll find it. And I'd love to have everybody in the world doing it. I'd love to sit down in an office one day and have somebody do it, and you know, I wouldn't even know that it was there. It's free, and it's kind of my give back to whoever wants to use it.
Well, that's much appreciated. So what is your email that they can contact you at?
So easiest way to get me is, my email address is on st@comcast.net.
Can you say that one more time? I think my internet connection cut out. I just want to make sure that our listeners do hear it.
Sure. So email is Andre, A-N-D-R-E, Sys, S-Y-S-T, like systems, @comcast.net. Friends on Facebook, it's Facebook, S-H-I-R-D-A-N. And I'm on Facebook, foray into Instagram, and I'm on LinkedIn too. So almost all the social medias you can get me.
Awesome. Well, we really do appreciate your time. We appreciate you teaching us about StatCheck today and allowing all of us to use this in our offices. And Andrew had to jump off. He said we were too garbly. He couldn't hear us, but he's really bummed because he really wanted to be a part of this conversation. He had some funny little things that he wanted to add and some questions. So if he has some extra ones, then maybe we'll email that over to you and talk about it in our intro. But we really do appreciate you taking the time to be with us today and chat and explain this to us.
My pleasure.
Great. Well, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. And please, anybody who is listening and has a perio office, or I'm sorry, an office where the perio patients are just all over the board, I really encourage you to contact Andre and really chat with him, because he's very helpful and very much a wealth of knowledge. So do that. So thanks, Andre.
My pleasure.
Okay.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.